Hi, and welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson, and it is an absolute pleasure to welcome Gary Neville, the Gary Neville, onto the podcast today. Ex-Manchester United player turned businessman, Gary is a true Northern legend, and I'm so excited and feel very privileged to have him joining me on the podcast today. In this episode, we discuss the issues of player authenticity on social media in the wake of Phil Lynch's controversial interview, the role social media has played in Gary's own career and how it has pivoted over time, and what he hopes for the digital world his daughters are entering. Welcome, Gary, to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Good to be here.
Do you want to introduce yourself? I'm sure people know who you are, but...
Gary Neville, ex-Manchester United football player, now owner of Salford City Football Club and various different businesses in Manchester in education, development and production.
So the reason that I've asked you on today is because you have pivoted your career and what you're known for into leadership and business through using social media in quite a prevalent way and using different channels for different things now. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you found that transition and what benefit social media has been to that.
I think to start with, it's worth going back to the sort of last couple of years in my football career when Rio Ferdinand and a few others went on Twitter. And I remember the manager at the time being very reluctant towards it. What is this stuff? What is this Twitter? You know what I mean? Basically, no one knew anything about it really. It was emerging. Our club's PR and media department were sort of not quite understanding whether this thing would take off, and there was no social media managers, there was no data analysts, there was nothing like that. You know, so you're talking 2010, 2011. And I went on, I think, a few weeks after I retired. And I don't know why I went on, but Rio kept telling me to go on.
Well, he was one of the first, wasn't he?
Rio was the first. He definitely was the first. He always, to be fair to me, he's innovative around that. And he does see sort of what would be a means, you know, the communication, the new sort of media world. He does see that. He's good at it. He communicates well through it. And he was encouraging me to go on. I thought, it's not me. And I wouldn't have gone on whilst I was a Manchester United football player.
Why?
One, because at the time it was new. And I didn't feel as though it would help me. And I didn't feel as though I communicated through sort of what would be, you know, MUTV, Sky, the sort of broadcasters at the time. I didn't need to go on social media. I didn't quite understand it and I didn't quite get it. And then when I went on it first time, you get addicted for that first period and you get into it and you start to realise it's a way of communicating directly with people. I was not going on back then to build an audience or grow a business career. That was nothing of the sort. It was more intrigue and I was in the media. And what I found in the early days of Twitter was that it was the best source of information for me on football, directly. You have to wait. You know, I'd waited for the newspaper to come out the morning after for my whole career to see what the news was. You know, I'll go on teletext, you know, and that updates probably every like 7 hours. This thing was chucking out relevant information, new information within 10 minutes. I thought, that's even to this day, I could not now come off Twitter purely because of the information I get off it from sport, football, politics, music, whatever it may be. It's my best source of information, better than what would be websites, platforms, newspapers online. And so for me at the time, it was an innocent introduction into it. It was intrigue. It was people like Rio saying, oh, get on it, particularly if you're going to go on Sky Television. You need to be able to communicate your thoughts and make sure that you get your analysis points across. And where I found it in the early days, it was helpful with Sky, was if I'd sort of said something on Sky that wasn't clear or if something wasn't quite right, I could clarify that after and I could put sort of what would be an explanation as to why I'd named a man of the match or why I thought someone was at fault for a goal. Also, I found it quite intriguing that you could get into debates with people. Some would call them arguments. and I think I do that less now, but certainly at the time I was quite active in respect of taking people on. So for me, it was more intrigue. Certainly wasn't anything about building a business career. I think in the last 2 or 3 years, I've recognised that having that social media following, having that sort of profile on social media platforms, no doubt assists me in various different things, whether it be commercially, whether it be sort of the power and reach of your voice. I'm not sure how it helps me in my business.
How have you found LinkedIn? Because you went on LinkedIn earlier this year, haven't you?
I find it a bit awkward to use and to look at. Yeah. I find it the most awkward out. Maybe it's because it's the newest.
Yeah.
So I find Instagram, went on Instagram 3-4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago now. Twitter I find the easiest to use. Maybe it's because I've been on it the longest. Instagram I find it's quite simple.
Mm.
I find LinkedIn quite awkward and sort of from a technology point of view, it feels to me like it hasn't had the investment into it to make it more slick. Feels still a little bit sort of like, what's going on? There's too much on the page. I always think that, and it's something that comes from working at Sky, we used to have this rule that if you can't understand it in 3 seconds, the people at home have got no chance. Mm. So every time I go on my LinkedIn page, I just see this sort of barrage of sort of connections and different things. I think it takes me more than 3 seconds to get hold of it.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, that means it isn't as slick as it should be. But I found it quite good in the sense of sending different messages out there. Talking to a different audience, it's certainly a lot more polite than Twitter and a lot more polite even than Instagram. But I'm new on it and it's something that I think does maybe assist in respect of what I think it does is maybe amplify the work that I'm doing in the business area, but also sometimes the work of the teams and the work of the people within the businesses. And it tells you what they're doing and you can, you know, you like something, it goes onto your timeline. It tells everybody sort of the good job that members of your team are doing, which is really important, I think.
A lot of your team do quite prevalent on LinkedIn as well, aren't they? Talking about work they do at Hotel Football. I'm thinking of Jess because Jess is always everywhere and the great work she does at Hotel Football. And I think that helps your business grow because we had Ash on. Ash came on the podcast earlier this week and he was saying about the benefit of having personal brands within business to help companies grow and develop. And having you on there, I think, will help. One, with your hiring strategies, because they'll see what you're about, not just from the football perspective, but also from a business leader. So transitioning onto LinkedIn, I think, has been one of the best things you'll do for your business. Because you've got so many different businesses, haven't you, now that you're involved in?
Yeah, probably 5 or 6. So I've got the development company, the production company, Stock Exchange, Hotel Football, Salford City, UA92, and maybe 1 or 2 more, I'm not sure. But generally, you're right. I think when you talk about, say, for instance, Hotel Football and Jess, I think COVID, because of the lack of face-to-face contact, it made me realise how good that team were at Hotel Football in propelling and projecting the business and that how more important they were than, say, I was or the other owners who were obviously sort of what would be famous ex-football players. But they are far more important in terms of the sort of to the guests, to the people who work in the business. They're passionate about the business. And if you think about what I think about a football team, the first thing I look on the pitch at a football team is, do I like them? Are they passionate about wearing the shirt? Do they care? Do they go and clap the fans? And every time I see some of our staff and team at Hotel Football, they're passionate about the shirt. They clap the fans. They really want to wear the shirt. And I say to myself, yeah, that's why I like it. And to be fair, I think I've seen more of that through LinkedIn than I have, say, through Instagram and through... In fact, I definitely have seen more of it through LinkedIn than I have through the other two platforms that I'm on.
Yeah, it's a really great space. I want to touch on what you said at the very beginning when you jumped on Twitter and you were one of the first footballers to go on there, but you didn't really know what it was. And you've talked quite a lot this week about how that's changed in football and especially how United have come out publicly and said that they've got a strategy for players that is kind of holding their voices back. Do you want to talk a little bit about your feelings on that? Because I know you've got strong thoughts. I've got strong thoughts.
I don't mind having a strategy.
Yeah.
Everyone should have a strategy. And if, you know, that strategy sounds like it needs to be really well planned and thought out. But the idea of communicating in an authentic way with the fans, if you're a Manchester United player, should be a strategy that every player has. You know, you have to make sure that those fans realise that you love the shirt, that you're committed, that you're training well, that you're even that you're a good personality and character.
Mm.
Your Twitter and your Instagram are your personality and character. It's a way in which you can tell people in the world what you are.
Mm.
It is not a way, I believe, to... look, there's also another way. There's a business. I get it. So I know Sky Sports and other commercial partners that I have will like the idea of me having whatever it is, 4.8 million followers on Twitter. It helps me gain maybe a better salary. It helps me gain a better commercial deal. So I understand there is a commercial element to Twitter. But surely as part of that, there has to be an element of if your name is on that bio, it's got to be you.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean say you have to post it. I get the fact that the lads might be travelling.
Mm.
They might be travelling that afternoon. They might have come off training, they might have taken a picture or a little selfie on the plane. They might not have had a chance to send it. They've sent it to someone in their team. Can you just post that out for me this afternoon with these words? Just travelling over to Porto to play a Champions League game. Can't wait for tomorrow, whatever it might be.
Mm.
But there's no excuse for not having your own words on it. Yeah. There is no excuse. You can have someone write it, but you know something? I can't change that now.
No, because it's you and it's authentic.
And you know, if I started speaking perfectly and writing perfectly on Twitter, people would say, hang on a second.
Yeah, it's not you.
It's theirs. It's its. He's got them all the right way. Oh, what's happened?
Mm.
Someone's writing that for him.
Yeah.
So the idea that I've been doing that authentically for sort of 11 years, and I used the example this morning in the Times article that I did. Liam Gallagher, it's him.
Yep.
Noel Gallagher, it's not him, but he tells you it's not him. He says, on the top of his bio, he says, my management team, my label, run this account. I've got no problem with either of those.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is it being you and your management team running it and you're not coming clean. And I think authenticity, if you're talking about communication with fans and you're saying sorry to the fans after a football match, that has to be you. I'm demanding that has to be you. I'm a Manchester United fan.
Mm.
I don't hear from your management team. I'm not interested in them.
You also don't want it to be an algorithm-based response.
I mean, the guy last week, he made such a massive mistake.
It's terrible.
The guy last week made such a massive mistake. He was bragging about how good he was and what he could do. And I think he was trying to impress.
Mm. Look how smart I am with all this data.
Look, to be honest with you, you live in a world and a company whereby you're building brands based on algorithms, data and analytics.
Yeah.
And I actually, to be fair, in our businesses would want that level of depth and support. But we're talking about human beings here.
Yeah.
Now, I get human beings can be brands and I get that, you know, someone who I know extremely well, David Beckham, has got one of the biggest personal brands in the world. But I know he sees every communication that goes out. I know that he signs it off. I know that he has an input into it. I know that he looks at it. I know that they're his words.
Mm.
And I know in the last 6 to 12 months, I've been getting more wound up, particularly after defeats, where you've got this, what would be, you could line up the players for a team and you've got, might be a word different on the same tweet going out from 15 different players.
Mm.
And I'm like, come on, lads.
Yeah.
We're better than that, aren't we? I know you. You're great characters. You've got good personalities. The fans love you. You love the fans. You know, either don't speak after a defeat. I've got no problem, by the way. You lose 5-0 to Liverpool at home. I ain't posting out on Twitter.
Mm.
I'm going quiet. I might have to go and do an interview on Sky and I might have to go and do a press conference with the media, but I'm certainly not going on Twitter and apologising. And if I'm going on Twitter and apologising, it's me, I'm showing my face.
Yeah.
And they can see that there is that depth of hurt and feeling. There's no way I'm posting out some mundane, vanilla, sanitised message which says, you know, disappointed today. I know you didn't want that result. We didn't want it either. Whatever it might be. I'm making it up again now in terms of what they say. But it has to be you and it has to be from the heart. And I want football players to be independent thinking. I want my children to be independent thinking. I want them to make their own decisions. I want them to get advice and I want them to have, you know, I get the fact that football players will be briefed. They'll have comms managers. They'll get briefed before they go into an interview. Absolutely, 100%. I used to want that when I was at the end of a football match. If I played 90 minutes and I've been beaten or knocked out of a World Cup, I'm going speaking to they're coming speaking to me and saying, look, these are the headlines.
Mm.
This is what's being said out there. This is what's on social media. This is what the newspapers are saying. This is what the interview's been like on ITV or BBC or Sky. And I'm prepared then for the questions that are coming my way. And I know that basically it's going to be a difficult interview, but I'm prepared. I'm not sending out my social media manager to go and speak for me, though.
God, it just makes me, in a place where it's that there's so much passion as well as there is in football, to sit at home as a fan to see something like that just makes me really angry. I don't know what United are trying to get out of it by having that sort of control over the players.
So what I've heard today, just in the sort of few hours since that article's gone out, is that a couple of people have come out and said, but the reason the players don't run their own accounts is because of the abuse they receive in return. So let's just look at that for a second.
Mm.
If you are going to lose 5-0 to Liverpool and post out, whether it's you or whether it's your management team, you're going to receive abuse in return.
Well, you still do and you don't play anymore.
So you have a choice to make. Do you want to look at your mentions? Do you want to look at your timelines? Again, I've got no problem, by the way, with a social media team posting out on behalf of a player and the player not seeing the mentions or their timeline. I've got no problems. Sometimes after a bad commentary on a Sunday night, I might be knackered at 7 o'clock. I'll be on the bike on the way back to the hotel. And I know I've not done that well today. I've got something wrong. And I think, I ain't looking tonight because I know it's going to be crap. I can't be bothered.
Mm.
I don't want it tonight. And I can, you know, take most things, but sometimes I just think, no, not tonight. It's gone off. Mm. I'm not going on it.
Mm.
Most of the times I'll read it and it's no problem. But sometimes I do that. So from my point of view, I've no problem with a social media team posting out what a player thinks and then them not seeing them. I don't expect players to read the abuse or read the timelines or the mentions. But I expect them, if they're going to post out, it's going to be them. And the fact that they receive abuse is not an excuse for allowing a management team to put words out that are based on algorithms and controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
No, I'm not having that. Mm. I can't accept that as a football player, as an ex-captain of Manchester United. I cannot accept, as a fan of Manchester United, that my players who are representing our club that are wearing that badge are not speaking themselves. Mm. And if they're not going to speak themselves, don't speak. Have a week off social media after you get beat by Liverpool 5-0. No problem with that, mate. I don't want to hear from you, yeah. To be honest with you. I'm happy that you're going back to work and you're training.
Still authentic, that, isn't it,
yeah.
If they do that?
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I was gutted. And your next post a week later might be,
this is what I've learned in the
week. Yeah, I just couldn't bear to post for a week. Honestly, I didn't even know what to say to you. But we're here again. We're going tomorrow and let's fight, whatever it might be. But that's fine. Fans will have that all day long.
I think it'll change the relationship between fans and players.
The reason I'm going for it at the moment is not because I'm on a sort of a... I don't tend to do things if I just think I'm battering sort of football players or if I'm sort of hammering social media teams. This is fundamentally wrong, because what you are is taking away independent thinking, authenticity from human beings, and that is wrong.
Yeah.
You are controlling the narrative. We're talking about now, we don't know the levels yet of how elections, and we're being socially engineered for elections, Brexit, all the things over the last few years, we don't know how big an influence this is having on us.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling it's going to be enormous. Mm. And the idea that football players start then to manipulate fans, football fans, in the same way in which a regime may manipulate an election or a major vote on the EU, I'm really uncomfortable with it coming into our sport.
Yeah.
I'm really uncomfortable with it. I can't stop it in sort of a global basis in respect of elections and regime change and Brexit and other things. But what I can do is have a big voice on it in terms of football and sport and make sure that we say, right, if it's your name at the top of that account, football players are asking at the moment, rightly so, for validation and verification of everybody on social media so that if there is abuse, there is consequence.
There's issues with that as well.
But they're asking for that, and I personally would say I'm okay with that. However, it's got to be you then that's posting.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways. Yeah. You can't be validated and it not be you, and asking someone else to be validated over here.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, doesn't work like that.
Life, you know, you've got to stand up, and you know, I think it's horrific some of the abuse that players receive after England going out of a tournament, or whether it be a Manchester United defeat by Liverpool. There is a line that gets crossed far too often that is, to be fair, not right. But I think this, on the other side, isn't right either. And we're talking about a massive investment, it would seem, into manipulating football fans. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because we've talked separately about the growth of communities on social and how, for football clubs like Salford, building communities online is actually the way to help grow the club for the future.
Yeah.
So there are positives with using social for football and making it authentic and real and getting people aligned to the players. But there is a lot of negatives, and there's a lot that the platforms need to be doing to be better.
It's 99%. I'd say it's 99% positive.
Okay, that's good. What do you get
out
of it
then?
It's like
when people say about Sir Alex Ferguson, the hairdryer. 99% of the time, this wasn't the hairdryer. 99.9% of the time, it's not the hairdryer. You think about every single day and every tweet you read and every Instagram post you read, and then think about which one that you see that's abusive. It's a very small minority.
Very small, but you very focus small. On the small.
But you do. It's human behavior. It's a psychologist 15 years ago, 20 years ago. You can wake up in the morning, be in the most incredible mood, everything's perfect, and someone across the road that you've never met in your life, that you don't know, has nothing to do with you, can shout something over that, and it can change your whole mood for the day. Because we allow outside influences and people who we don't know. And I think Ricky Gervais is brilliant at sort of capturing that sometimes within his sort of what we stand up, how he basically sort of like people are having a go at him and he's not even asked them to follow, you know, he's not asked them to follow him. He's like, yeah. Hang on a minute, I've posted out something that I want to do today. You're having a go at me for that. It's like, it is a bit mad. And people are braver behind the keyboard because that doesn't exist on the streets. I live in the city centre of Manchester and I've not had one single football fan, there's a lot of Manchester United fans in the city, come over to me and say, you're an absolute disgrace for supporting Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But on Twitter, I've got 15 million,
you'll
probably
post
10,000.
About something completely different and all the comments underneath are all like, why haven't you stood up against
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. So my fact of the matter is, but no one's brave enough to come and do it in the street.
Yeah.
So that's always been the case. So I would always say, if people were coming up to me in the street and challenging me, I'd say, right, this is really going wrong. But I'm comfortable with sort of taking that stance. It's no problem. But social media isn't representative of real life. And it shouldn't really have the impact upon your mood that it does. But it does. That one negative comment hits you harder than the 1,500 good comments or neutral
good
comments.
Yeah. And you say it's for good. What have you noticed then that you... I also want to talk about the girls, because your two girls, you put them on your social. What are your hopes for them with social media?
I want it to be a... It's part of your almost like a career passport. Yeah, it's your CV in some ways. Your social media, because if you want to look at what a character and personality someone is, you go on their Instagram feed and that personality and character comes right across. The personality and character of a brand or a company comes across through their social media, hopefully, not always, but hopefully. And I think with my girls, when I sort of look at them now, I think to myself, I want them to be confident, I want them to have personalities, I want them to communicate. I don't want to be this sort of parent that says, I don't want my girls on social media, I don't want them on phones. Get over it. It's here to stay. It isn't going away. So you better get them good at it.
Yeah, and know how to use it.
Yeah,
right
and know
way.
How to use it. You better get them good at it. Stop, stop denying the truth. Stop denying what's happening. Stop saying that this is no good for you. They're going to do it. They're going to be on their phones. They're going to be on their iPads. They're going to be on their tablets. They're going to be on LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, all the other sort of forms of communication that are out there. So why don't we get them good at it? Why is it not being taught in schools? Why are we still... my daughter brought home a little booklet last week because she's next year she has to make her choices. Right. And I said, let's pretend that you're having to make them now and make your choices. And she'll do 11 GCSEs next year. She's 13 on Monday and she'll be 14 next year, and that's when she'll have to make her choices. And I reckon there's 5 subjects on there that'll be a waste of time to her. Social media, diversity and inclusion, and other subjects, business, entrepreneurialism, they should replace some of these, what would be 1970s and 80s subjects that are still in the curriculum in this country, because we think that that's what you need to learn. The curriculum needs ripping up, apart from the 5 or 6 major sort of stalwarts that need to be there, you know, your maths, your English literature, maybe a science, probably another one somewhere. Sport and health and well-being. Health and well-being should be taught at schools.
Yep.
Diversity, inclusion, social media, digital, technology, financial literacy. These are things that should be taught at schools because they're the things that you're going
to
need.
You know where they're learning it now, though, financial literacy and how to get a mortgage. TikTok. That's where they're getting that from.
So for me, that's why part of the reason why we set up a university, because we wanted to challenge the conventional. And the school curriculum needs ripping up. And it needs, I say ripping up.
I agree with you. It absolutely does. There was nothing I learned in school that I use now.
Very little.
My
maths
career.
And English. And to be fair, my English is poor because I still get my thirds and my eights. Yeah, shockingly wrong.
My
maths is good. My maths did well for me. I'm sharp in meetings on maths. So it's still, if I look at a sort of a, if people start trying to, you know, people look at your next footballer, think you're a bit thick. They think, oh, I'll try and throw a few numbers at him here. So it's, sometimes you just need to put them back in the box. And I do, I'm quite sharp at fast maths. And it's, you spot the sort of bullshit from people as well. So I think in respect of curriculums and my children, they should be taught these things at school. So they're not taught these things at school. In fact, keep your phone in your bag. I don't want to see your phone. Keep it in your coat till lunchtime. You're not allowed it during the day. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
No, it's because they're scared of it.
They're scared because they don't want to step into a new world which exists, which is happening around us, which isn't going away. And these platforms are not going away. So we better get our kids good at it, encourage them and give them confidence to use it properly rather than think. And I hear a lot of sort of, oh, I can't believe they're always on that stupid thingy and they're always on that stupid Facebook and they're always on that stupid... That just doesn't work.
There's an amazing quote that I heard. I got told by a psychologist that was like, we can't expect parents to... There's so much negativity from parents about kids on social. But what they are at the moment is that they're travel agents. So they'll tell you about the destination. They'll tell you how bad it is, or they'll tell you what's good about it, but they don't know. They've probably never been. Mm. What they need to be is like tour guides. So they need to know what machete to use in which part of the jungle and how to get to certain cities because they've been and they've experienced it. That needs teaching in school. And schools need to know that. Police need to know that from a safeguarding measure. I have gone in and talked to schools about values and knowing your values, because then you can pick who to follow that fulfill those values. But none of it happens. And the girls that I've spoken to are like, whoa, this is like completely new, because everyone just tells them how bad it is and how it's going to, you're going to compare yourself, you're going to have an eating disorder, you're going to get yourself in all sorts of trouble if you're on there. And you're right, 95% of the online population are on social. It's not going to go anywhere.
No, it's not going anywhere. It's only going to get
bigger.
Bigger in our lives. I said, newspapers have had to completely change the whole way in which they operate to go online. Mm. You know, the sort of sales of sort of the copy of the newspaper and the newsagent are down so much from where they were 25 years ago.
Because everyone goes to Twitter because it's everyone, breaking news.
I can read every single article on Twitter from every single journalist, you know, half a day before it's actually in the paper, then it's out.
It's
madness. And you know, look, school do explain the dangers of things. It was bonfire night last Friday, and I actually, to be fair, was picking Molly up on Friday. I said, the firemen still come in to speak.
Wellifant. Would you remember Wellifant?
I still come in to explain the dangers of fireworks. I was eating fireworks
really
going off everywhere.
About Wellifant?
And I started thinking about, do you actually still come in to do that every single year? Said, yeah, they were in earlier on in the week explaining sort of how to use sparklers, how to use fireworks, stay away from bonfires. And I thought, well, that's good. I'm happy that they still do that and they explain the dangers of sort of bonfire night. And I thought to myself, why wouldn't they do that around social media? Why wouldn't you have social media and online sort of classes? Why wouldn't you sort of teach children how to create content, how that can be part of their personality, how it can actually inform their CV when they're older to go and get a job even? Because ultimately, I think as an employer, if you're looking at someone, you want someone who's a character personality who displays that and sort of got that confidence. And I think that your social media can be that. Not necessarily doesn't have to be always dancing around and doing things that are wild. Mm. It could be in an artistic way.
Yeah.
Could be
editing. Yeah. They're learning to edit. They're learning to overlay sounds. Yeah. They're like cropping and doing all stuff with it. We hire so many people based on their
to build content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they know how to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's it. They're so savvy in respect of technology. Just naturally by being on it, that I think, anyway, it was a question about my girls, it was, wasn't it?
You went on to something that I'm quite passionate about as well, so it was good. It was good. This podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because in every episode I try and open up with honesty and talk about subjects that perhaps someone in my role as an MD would usually avoid. So I've talked about things like anxiety, miscarriage, imposter syndrome, fear of failure. So would you mind sharing with me your admission of something that you probably
shouldn't say?
Yeah.
I didn't think you were going to ask me that, because I thought you'd change it to social media, so no, I never thought of it.
I know, that's why I wanted to put you on the spot. Whether that's about some struggles you faced during your career, a secret about lockdown, something you're trying to overcome. Gary, I shouldn't say this, but.
I shouldn't say this, but I wish I had the money to go and get the club off the Glazer family.
How close are you?
I'm fucking miles away. I don't think I'd even be able to afford to buy myself a statue outside. I think the club needs to come back into hands of people who understand the club and can develop it in such a way that commercially, you know, is fantastic, like the club currently is. But there is so much to do with that club. There is so much to achieve on and off the pitch. When you look at what other clubs have done in this country and around the world, within their stadium, within their sort of what would be their master plans around the stadium, the regeneration, the impact within the communities around where they are, the jobs, the enterprise, the feeling, the spirit, the team, obviously. Which, you know, I think you can go through bad patches. So I think at the moment the investment has gone into the team in the last few years. So I couldn't say that, you know, you spend more money. They spent 400 or 500 million quid in the last 2 or 3 years. But I think that when there's something that's missing.
Do you think it's lost a bit of soul?
Yeah, that soul, that spirit. And that sometimes can be a little bit sort of like, oh, but you remember when Alex Ferguson married and Matt Busby was in? No, I'm not talking about that. There's a spirit and a soul that should be in a football club that goes right the way from the top, from the owners, right the way through to the sort of the players, the staff, the fans. Everyone should be connected. And that connection will not exist while the Glazer family are in play. And I think that I said after Super League, that was the first time that I came out and said they need to sell, because that was a sort of, that was a, that to me, Manchester United should be a guardian of English football. They should want to be someone who protects English football. Mm. And I just think that the way in which they have not committed to the club, in terms of when you go to a club like Manchester United, you have to commit to it. I think they think they understand it. I think they think they know it. They don't. I promise you, they don't know it. Mm. You can't unless you're there.
Mm.
Yeah, I went over to Valencia. I moved my family over. I was there and I thought, right, I'm going to get into it. I'm going to learn the language. I'm going to get to know the journalists. I'm going to get to know the people. But I couldn't get in. I couldn't get to know it. I was only there for them, but I couldn't get to know it.
Mm.
They're not even here. They come over once every blue moon. I shouldn't say blue moon on this podcast, actually.
Talking about Man United.
Yeah,
and the
but generally, I think, yeah, I just think for me, that would be the one thing that if you said, you know, I think any Man United fan would do the same. So I don't think I'm saying something that's sort of spectacular for a Manchester United fan, because I think any one of us that had the money to do it would go and do it.
Should do a little crowdfund, start it off.
It's not a little crowdfund.
I know it's not a little
and
one.
And they'll probably say no at the end of it. We've raised 40 quid.
Yeah. No, I'm all right, thanks. But no, I think it needs that heart and that soul, and it feels like it's become a business rather than a club.
Yeah.
And, you know, I support Oldham, and I have done from a very young age, and being a six-year-old.
But look at that at the moment.
It makes me really
Bury, where
sad.
I grew up, you know, my mum, my dad, you know, my dad's got a stand named after him. My mum was the last person kicked out when they went into administration, and still dealing with the administrators now. And just because it's been mishandled, mismanaged, and that's, to be fair, mismanaged financially and badly financially. I mean, I think no one's suggesting that that's happening at United at the moment, other than the fact that they do obviously pay themselves a lot of money every year and they do have a big amount of debt. But I think that there is that genuine feeling that, and I'm not saying that football clubs need to go back into the hands of local business owners or ex-players. I'm not saying that. I just think if you buy a football club, and there have been some great examples of international owners, national owners who buy football clubs who do it really well, they get it.
Mm.
They know how to connect to the fans, they know how to connect to the manager, the manager knows how to connect to the owners, and it can be done really well. And at the moment, two clubs that are doing it really well are the two that, to be fair, Manchester United are biggest rivals, and that's City and Liverpool.
Yeah,
and they're getting
Everton
a lot
are
right.
really good as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting a lot right. Mm. They're getting a lot right, and you have to sort of hold your hands up and say they're getting a lot right on and off the pitch, and Manchester United aren't getting as much right on and off the pitch.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I knew you'd give me some gems, but yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I honestly feel so, there's so many moments in my career and doing this podcast where I feel so bloody lucky to be able to have conversations with people around topics that are so inspiring, and this has without doubt been one of the highlights of my career. It's been an absolute honour and a pleasure to have Gary on the podcast today. I'm so grateful that he took the precious time, because he's so busy, to come and talk to me about the impact of social and social for good and how we can use it in the right way. So I just want to thank him, and also thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed the episode, please share it far and wide. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and write us a review, give us 5 stars, share it, because a lot goes into this. And as I say, I'm so grateful that Gary gave up his time to come and talk to me. And I will be back with another episode of I Shouldn't Say This, But next week. Thanks so much.